In tech we trust. Sure about.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 97 of In Tech We Trust. Who's on the show? We have Yadin.
Hey, now.
Hello. And Gabriel. Hey.
Hello.
Yeah.
Right. I'll just run through the agenda. We're going to talk about a bunch of VMware stuff, the fact that the show's coming up. There's going to be different social media things, news leading into the show. We're going to talk about automotive news, about a Jeep being hacked, and about Tesla and Mobileye splitting up. We'll talk about a couple of restructurings at Microsoft and HPE, and we'll see if we have any time after that to talk about that asshole named Jeff Bezos.
Ready to go? It was very subtle.
Very subtle.
Well, you know, when you get to have $65 billion for, you know.
Yeah, you could probably take a few barbs.
Yeah. So let's talk about VMworld. It comes up at the end of the month.
All right.
And I think and for the first time this year, we're going to be doing an In Tech We Trust. Is it the first time we're doing
it? No, this will be the second time.
Did you guys do it last year?
Yeah, we did.
Was I there?
No, we did. That's the VDB takeover show. That was VDB guys popped up on the stage.
Oh, yeah.
That was Lauren pre In Tech We Trust. So she was on that panel with a couple other people. Where we did just like a live broadcast using the wonderful stuff that the V Brown Bag crew had put together for us.
Good guys, those V Brown Bag guys, but they didn't. I guess they didn't allow me to be on, or I wasn't there. Just
I don't think you were actually at VMworld. This is last year at Moscone, so.
Yeah, I know that's easy. Well, I'm going to be in Vegas this year. I'm going to drive to Vegas through the desert. You know,
nice.
Yeah.
Fear and Loathing style?
Absolutely. Yeah, top.
Watch out for the bats.
Yeah, yeah, it's backcountry.
Hopefully I'll still have my mind when I get there.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. Are we going to invite guests for that? Or is it just going to be us hunkering down somewhere where there's a hole?
Well, so there's in part of the challenge with that one is it's videotaped and broadcast live at the same time, and it'll be on YouTube, on their YouTube channel as well. We may be able to rip the audio and publish that or publish the links to it.
Okay. Is Nigel going to be there? Nigel's in the States for a month.
I don't know if he's going to be there for that.
Yeah, we need to tell him to wear pants.
Yes, pants.
Mm. Oh, if he's up at a panel behind like a nice draped cloth table, it won't matter.
True.
I've been seeing way too many people wearing kilts.
Yeah.
We could just do it. We could just do the podcast on the floor like, you know, Nigel did at DockerCon.
Yeah. That's right. We could just do it on the floor. Yeah.
Who needs infrastructure?
So, the floor tends to be very loud.
So are either of you guys doing any other social stuff there, you know, that'll be published at the show?
I'm going to be doing a bunch of podcasting for my other podcast.
Okay. Well, just go ahead and name it the Socks one, right?
For the SockNet podcast. Yeah. So I'll be grabbing a whole bunch of different people from all over the place. I'm sure some of you listening might even get pings from me and just walking around with the mic and talking about a whole host of different things. So look out for me.
Yeah. So look for pings from Yadin and ping Yadin. I'd say just find him on Twitter you know, you got a good idea, want to talk to him, just bug him, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Reach out to me if you want to. You want to be on one of the bite sized episodes? Feel free.
Hey, Gabe, do you have anything else?
No, you know, I mean, I'll be there. I'll be the one in Europe.
Okay, so yeah. I tell you what, Gabe. One thing I want to do, a live ridecast with you while I'm there, because I'm gonna have my bug, you know, pelted car. I'll be driving through the desert. Insects will be crusted all over it. Nice. I want to do a ridecast with you, and I'm gonna make this available. I wanted to make this available to everybody. You know, if you want to do a ridecast with me while I'm there, let me know, right? My schedule's pretty open right now. I'm going to be trying to put that together. So if any listeners want to do a ridecast, let's set that
just
up.
Just make sure you park at the right garage because, last time I was in – I'm thinking wrong city. I was thinking we were at Moscone again where it's $70 a day to park at the Grand Marquis. But you get to go in and out of the parking lot.
Well, yeah, for $70, there should be an awful lot of in and out. Wink, 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 say no more privileges. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Okay, so let's talk about
– reach around.
Yeah. Hey.
This show just took a harsh turn.
There it goes. We're going to get it back on the rails right now. VMware leading up to the show always has a few things going on. And this year, I don't know, you can't really call them announcements. They weren't announcements, just pieces of news. Chris Wolf, a VP at VMware, talked about much more integration coming in the future between NSX and Cisco.
There was bad blood between NSX and you know, the VMware NSX team and the Cisco ACI teams. And this looks kind of like, hey, let's bury the hatchet and work together to put something out there. You know, I mean, that was the VMware CTO, Chris Wolf, coming out talking about, you know, more integration between Cisco and NSX in the future. Cisco missed out on buying NSX and ended up buying ACI or spinning ACI back in. And I think there was some butthurt there at some point. And, you know, now there's been a change of guard or change of leadership inside of Cisco. Maybe they're taking a different tact. And, you know, kind of, you know, let's both reach out with fig leaves and work together to continue to kind of build the partnership that they have, because they have worked together for such a long time.
You mean olive branches and not fig leaves?
Yeah, fig leaves, olive branches. I mean, because it was really nasty at one point. I mean, you know, there was a couple high-level people that left Cisco, went over to VMware, and it was like, you're a traitor, and I think a lot of that, too, is that the team, some of the team members like MPLS that were there, they were very, you know, very aggressive in their going after anybody who, you know, shipped a packet. You know, it's kind of like, hey, we own the network world. I'm like, there's room for a lot of people to play in that space.
Yeah, including Palo Alto, which has been doing well with NSX so far, apparently. At least that's what I read. Not that I know anything about it. So does Palo Alto take a second seat now to Cisco in this, or are they going to continue to stay a hot company?
I mean, more Palo Alto's firewalls, they're not necessarily traditional routing technology products. So, I mean, you know, an NSX, a Palo Alto-based firewall that integrates with NSX. I mean, when you look at it, you know, VMware saying they have, what, like 1,700 customers that deployed NSX? That's not a whole lot of customers. And I think that the ACI numbers are probably somewhat similar. I think really what you're finding is that software-defined networking hasn't taken off the same way other virtualization technologies have, and that it's a much tougher sell for certain organizations. And by partnering to kind of offer a better together, you know, perhaps both organizations are looking at a means to capture more of that market and share revenue instead of having to compete essentially for the same, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 customers that exist that want to do this.
Yeah, interesting. I would have thought they had more customers than that. I didn't know it was that small. So let's move on. We got to rip through this stuff in a hurry today. So we got something, a suggestion from a listener today who picked up a story from Trevor Pott in the Register yesterday. And the idea is that VMware filed a patent to hot swap the OS or hot swap the hypervisor in a machine. And Trevor thinks this is a really big deal. I'm not convinced that it is. I think there must be probably 100 ways to do this. So whatever patent you have, you know, they usually have to screw down the methods that are used. Somebody else can probably figure out another method. Did you guys get a chance to see that article, or, you know, even think about what this is?
Yeah, I was just wondering if we could all just agree the fact that the patent system doesn't really even work for tech companies. It just doesn't. It's made for pharmaceutical companies and some other IP for other industries. And the tech company just, it's like they file patents, so when they get bought, they've got a patent portfolio to buy. Am I totally off base here, guys? But that's just the way I see
it. It takes so long. I mean, and there's some legitimate tech. I mean, here's the challenge with patents, and this is the thing that's always been kind of my beef, is ones that list like 35 or 40 different pieces of prior art. So it's repackaging other people's work as a quote-unquote process, and they're patenting that. I think that's kind of cheap and crappy. If you've created a patentable concept, like let's say, you know, let's call it a new way to do deduplication or compression or encryption or something of that nature, and it's legitimately new, I think that that's something that you should be able to protect. Because R&D dollars are, you know, you spent the time and money of the R&D, you created something, and it's something that is somewhat, you know, it's unique, and it's not just recombobulating a bunch of bits and pieces back together for something else. I think that's a legitimate thing to patent.
Yeah.
But if you're taking a concept that's been out there for decades, because you know, operating system patching is such a pain in the ass, then, you know, I just don't see it that way. I mean, you know, AIX can do this stuff. There, you know, you go read the comments. You know, there's talk about K-splice and a few other things that are more esoteric.
Yeah, that's where I think a lot of the dysfunction lies in that last point that you made, which was when everyone's already doing it and someone just wants to patent something that is already out there in the marketplace just so they can say that they can stake their flag on it and say that they own it. And I think that's where a lot of the dysfunction. So it's not adding the value that it should, but it's creating dysfunction where it shouldn't.
Yeah, IBM itself must have about 1,000 patents on this very thing. You know, the patent king, IBM. Well, it's and besides doing a patent, well, it's anyway just a precursor to licensing agreements.
Yeah, but also maybe it's something that they're going to try to work to hedge against containers eating their lunch in the certain areas. You know, there's a lot of ways or a lot of areas you can kind of take this one. You know, I mean, I think for some, you know, for people that are that geek out on technology, there's interest here. You know, just kind of like there's certain processors, certain things that are released that, you know, look really cool on their face, but then you start to peel back the covers and you realize the limitations. And we always see that every time something like this is announced, you know, then it's like only for this 1% of workloads we would be able to do this. And it, you know, the devil will remain in the details as usual. So, I mean, it's interesting that they're going this route, but we'll see what the end product actually looks like before we get too excited.
Okay, but here's something to get excited about, our hot or not for the week. Instead of putting it at the end, we're going to put it in right now. And this it is about email scams, hot or not. Email scams are hot or not. The fact that they caught the Nigerian email scammer.
There was one of them?
Well, no.
His name is Mike.
His name is Mike, and he's known as Mike, and he's alleged to have a network of 40 people.
Because, I mean, that's small potatoes. I mean, the best website to talk to if you're really – I mean, it's been around forever, but 419Eater has been a website that's been around for quite some time that has always preyed upon the Nigerian scammers.
Huh.
And I believe 419 is the area code that they call from, right? And they have a trophy room. I think some of it is not safe for work. Shows like, you know, the requests, like in order to, they string these guys along, they play them, right? And, you know, they make them pose with pictures, and signs and, you know, the Church of Wine, Bread and Fish. And you'll see a picture of a guy with a jug of wine on his head holding a loaf of bread with a fish in his mouth.
Nice.
And they do these things to prove that the people, you know, it's like, oh, this is legit. And they just mess with them. And I think that's hilarious.
That is hilarious. Is that any way dark web stuff or is this just dumb web?
No. I mean, it's all out there.
Okay.
Like, there's just a picture that says, I am Chode.
<You know? laughs> That's fantastic. See, well, I was excited just because I thought I'd get, you know, my $19.95 back, you know, from Mike.
Yeah.
Because he still owes me $2.6 million, actually.
Well, I mean, there's been articles by, like, reporters that got scammed by these things. I'm like, how do you get scammed by this?
Good question.
Is the internet brand new to you? I mean, you've never...
Okay, so is it hot or not that this guy got caught?
No, because there's about 50 million others that will pop up in his place.
You think?
I'm excited. I'm calling it hot. Mike's behind. Interpol got Mike. So
Interpol, they finally got him. They finally got somebody.
The other 50. They missed the other 50,000 mics, though. They're still working, chipping away.
I'm gonna say hot also, just because we could have talked about Suicide Squad, and even though none of us has seen it, we'd all probably say it's not hot based on the reviews.
I want to watch that. I posted a picture in the Slack. Maybe we can put it in the show notes. But it's a guy with like Kiss makeup on, holding a sign that says "Kiss for Christ, Rock on in Jesus' name."
Please,
that's like where these guys get this stuff. But
it's fantastic.
Please bring awesome. That. Yeah. Okay. So we have to keep driving forward in the agenda, and we're going to go into the automotive section of the show today. There's a couple automobile stories. First one is about the Jeep getting hacked at high speed. And the other one is about Tesla and Mobileye splitting up. But let's go talk about the Jeep one first, right? Yadin, is this something that's interesting to you? I mean, you've been a Tesla fan, and we've talked about it before. What's up?
Well, as far as this goes, I know Chrysler's not happy about this, but my friend is a big Jeep fan, and he's not worried about this any way, shape, or form. But I'd say if I were in a Jeep, I'd be worried about it because not that I'm really understanding what the monetizable value is of hacking somebody else's automobile at high speed, but I'm sure there's something that somebody's going to do with it one day and exploit. I think a lot of people, you know what I do think is interesting about this story is that some people, hackers, white hat hackers and some black hats actually did some 0-day stuff and tried to sell their 0-day hacks to the car companies. And it's amazing because their response wasn't anything like a tech company's response. Like, you know, like Apple, like, or Google or whoever will find, oh, you found this exploit. Great. Thank you very much. You know, Jeep freaks out about this stuff. The automotive industry absolutely freaks out. And instead of, you know, rewarding these people that find these exploits, you know, they want to, you know, just hunt them down and shoot them.
But they should have bug bounties. You know, I mean, if you find something like this, it's a flaw and it needs to be adjusted and fixed. And just the way you do a bug bounty for a website or an application.
Oh, yeah. They don't see it that way at all.
They should crowdsource some of this stuff and, you know, not reward. I mean, it's maybe there's a little bit of monetary reward there, but you know, it makes everybody else safer.
Yeah, but doesn't this hack require, you know, access to the onboard diagnostics port? I mean, you know, I mean, come on.
This is not something that's like you got to get access to the ECU and the CAN and a bunch of other stuff inside the car. It's not like, you know, it's just like you could be driving behind the Jeep and take control of the steering. It's, you know,
you can't Bluetooth into the engine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, honestly, I think it's something that to be concerned about because, I mean, if, you know, if there's a will, there's a way type of thing. But ultimately, this is not something that's majorly exploitable by, you know, 99.99999% of the people on the planet.
Still, it's the tip of the iceberg of the bad news of Internet of Things. And with that, let's talk about Tesla and Mobileye. Now, Mobileye is a little Israeli company that was providing driverless mode technology to Tesla. And in the wake of the fatal accident that happened earlier this summer, it looks like these two companies have split up. What does that say about, you know, they think about their culpability, capabilities, or anything like that?
Well, this was a reputation thing. And I thought it was really interesting that that Mobileye was saying that there was, quote unquote, much at stake in terms of their reputation, and it was best to end the relationship with Tesla by the end of the year. Of course, Elon, I know that's a hit. I'm like, you know, not to be wanting to be associated with Tesla, which, you know, was, you know, one of the coolest companies, you know, on the planet, and now saying, you know, well, they don't want their reputation to get a hit, and I'm sure they're taking a huge bunch of the flack for this, and they're wanting to distance themselves from it, but I don't know. I'm not the, you know, the CEO of Mobileye, but I would have to question whether or not this is going to hurt them in the long run, even though it might help them a little bit in the short run.
Yeah, I gotta say it looks bad. It probably looks worse for Mobileye than Tesla. I mean, Tesla's got all this mojo. They've got Elon Musk. You know, I suppose I don't know. I don't know why Mobileye would want to split. To me, it looks like the divorce started on the Tesla side.
Yeah. I don't see the real long term business value here. I mean, they might see it, but I see this really hurting them long term. I think it was just a short term pain, and it caused them to make an emotional decision to split. Even if some of it started on the Tesla, there might have just been static between the two. Maybe it was something that wasn't even their decision. Maybe it was maybe Musk gave them the opportunity to, you know, bow out gracefully. You know, I don't really know.
Maybe they've got a better deal waiting at Jeep.
Maybe. There you go.
Okay, so next item up is corporate mergers, restructuring, and that sort of thing. Microsoft is laying off, has announced they're going to lay off about another 2,800 workers or so. Where are they coming from? What's this taking a bite out of?
Well, I mean, you think about it too, though. It could be a result of the acquisitions that they've had.
Yeah.
You know, it's people from smartphone business. Okay, duh.
And sales. You know, Kevin Turner left a couple of weeks ago, either left or was fired or something like that. And he had run the sales force there. And it may be that, you know, that the company just wanted to restructure and that other officers, you know, other board members at Microsoft thought the sales force was too big and needed to be cut down, consolidated. You know, no big surprise. Companies restructure and people get fired.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, in the grander scheme of things, you know, they have 118,000 people at the company. So, you know, it's not a huge number of layoffs. If you couple it with the 7,800 or so they did last year, I mean, and that's the reality of a very large organization.
Yeah, but let's just round that number down just for fun, right? Let's say it's 100,000, and if you lay off 2,000, that's 2%.
2%. Yeah.
That's pretty big.
It is, or, you know, but the thing is, it could be that they hire other people. Anytime you hear a layoff, the funny thing is there's a bunch of hiring going on as well. There's employee churn. There are new products and new divisions. There's acquisitions. There's all kinds of stuff that comes into a play. It could be an equilibrium event, right? It's like, hey, all right, we realize that we're not doing squat in the foam business. Let's kill this thing once and for all. We don't need to have, 2,000 people sitting around coding for Windows Phone that five people have, right?
Yeah, maybe they're trying to hire people back.
It's a business decision. I wouldn't say that it's some kind of – major alarmist thing, but anytime a large company lays people off, it's a big deal. I mean, compared to what HP did, what was it, 45 or 75,000 people over a course of a couple of years? That's a significant round of layoffs.
Right? Yeah, so let's talk about HP, right? HP is announced a restructuring this week, I guess, in a blog post, and a bunch of their people are going. Right. A bunch of senior executives are going.
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of, it's what, the head of storage, the head of cloud, boy, those are two areas that are, that are linked intrinsically,
And sales reductions to a couple of executives in sales and Martin Fink. I think was Martin Fink doing cloud or software? I'm trying to remember what his deal was.
I cannot recall off the top of my head, but the reality is, HP's in this kind of, they see that. I mean, if I'm HP and I see all the things that are going on with Dell EMC merging together and what other large organizations are doing, I gotta be going, wow, how am I gonna go out there and compete in this space with anything other than compute, which is what they do really well.
Yep.
And their networking isn't really known. People don't really buy into the big HP networking story. Their storage business does okay, but 3PAR is significantly long in the tooth. Most of their left-hand business is gone. They gave that product away and people didn't want it.
They failed to invest in it over years.
Yeah, they didn't, they just kind of let it run and now that everything is 3PAR and 3PAR only, and you look at that platform and it's like, yeah, they still sell a fairly good chunk of it, but it's going to be really hard for them. There are external pressures for them, and then the long development cycles of an ASIC-based storage platform definitely doesn't show agility.
Yeah, I think they're putting the wood behind the arrow of compute and software-defined stuff, and they're going to develop software, and they're going to partner with people. And the way I understand it, is that they're forming something called the infrastructure group. So instead of having these separate silos of networking, servers, and storage, it's going to be one thing, right, coming together.
The converged infrastructure, the product that they created and then failed to sell.
Well, they sort of saw a vision for it,
right.
but they never capitalized
on it. I mean, the funny thing is out of anybody who should have had a converged infrastructure platform, I mean, it was, HP was kind of first to kind of come up with the concept and kind of roll with it. And then, VCE and FlexPod came along and did it, and they just kind of sat around and did nothing with it.
I believe that was on Dave Donatelli's watch when he was there, which probably is one of the reasons why he's no longer there.
Right.
To me, this looks like it makes a lot of sense, right? Meg Whitman has said all along she wants to make this company behave like a startup, like a much smaller company, and she's collapsing these organizations.
300,000 people. It's never going to function like a startup.
But it's a lot smaller than that now.
Well, yeah, I guess now that when you break it apart, I haven't looked at the number of people, but I mean, it's, they've pulled the plug on Helion Public Cloud. It doesn't bode well for Helion as a product to begin with that, people are leaving that are, so their OpenStack integration and all this time and effort they've put into that, we'll see, I guess, they're talking about moving the Helion stuff into, the enterprise group and falling under that, software defined cloud group.
Something like that.
It just seems to be like more rebranding, more changing of names, and hoping that people don't notice.
Well, Helion, nobody knows what Helion is.
Well, there's people that know. I mean, they got in early, but I don't think they really realized they didn't spend the time and effort to really bolster that product the same way that somebody who was a pure play focus on it, like a Mirantis or a Red Hat.
True that.
And those two products lines, or those two organizations, and even Cisco with Metapod and the things that they have, they've executed better.
Yeah, no question.
And that's just the way it is. I mean, the big deal there is that they completely screwed the pooch with their Eucalyptus acquisition.
Yep.
I mean, they had the right pieces. more so than anybody else, and then just kind of like, I don't know, man, sat on the thumbs. Can't figure that one out for the life of me.
Well, we'll see whether or not it we'll watch it play out over the next couple of years and see if they can get that on track or not. It might be too late, and they might be able to make it go.
Maybe Oracle will have a cloud solution before they will. We'll see who has a better cloud portfolio 12 months from now, Oracle or HP.
After that great NetSuite acquisition last week, it's like, huh? Yeah, really? I mean, yeah, we're in cloud now. We bought NetSuite, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about Jeff Bezos. It came out last week that, you know, depending on Amazon stock price, he's the third wealthiest person on planet Earth with a net worth of over $65 billion. That's billion. I'm putting my little fingers at the corners of my mouth when I say that.
So it's like what, like 6 days of the federal government operating?
Did you see this coming? Did you see Bezos getting to be there?
I think if you go back to 1995, nobody would have saw this coming. And the funny thing is, I had a friend of mine that I went to high school with that was like one of the first people to work at Amazon. And he was like, he worked in the shipping department. He was like one of their first shipping employees.
Well,
and got a bunch of stock early on.
Yeah,
right?
Because he could ship boxes.
Yeah, he worked in the shipping department, right? And if he would have just held on to that stock, he would probably be worth, you know, $20 million, $30 million. But, you know, when it IPO'd and it started to get there, he blew it all and bought a couple cars. I'm like, talk about bad decisions. Then again, obviously, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but it's just like, oh boy, you know. But, you know, he's built an empire. I mean, he's a titan of industry. I mean, we would have to go back and look at other people like himself in history. You go look at, J.P. Morgan and, you know, you see people or Vanderbilt or Carlyle or, you know, there's a whole host of those guys. Carnegie. There's all these, you know, these guys that come along at the right time and they outperform everyone else. And it's just astonishing to see. They're larger than life characters. I mean, it's so hard to wrap your head around, right?
Right. But it's interesting that you say this because, you know, number one on the list is Bill Gates. And the last time there was a big, you know, break opportunity was software business. And this is a service business, right? Gates is the king of software. Sorry, Larry Ellison, you're not. And Larry would like to also have been in the services business, but he missed that. And Bezos has, you know, blown past Larry with, you know, he's king of services and he's not stopping at number three. I think the interesting story here is that Bezos will be number one.
Yeah. But also when you think about it, they don't just sit around and sell crap on Amazon.
No.
Right. They're constantly evolving that organization. They're constantly investing. And it's a low margin business. If you look at Amazon outside of AWS, if you look at Amazon as a retailer, that's not a high margin business. They're not cash rich, right?
No, in AWS, even AWS, you know, they try to offer their services at commodity pricing.
Right. And that way you can continue to own and dominate the market and create kind of a, you know, I mean, now you can basically have cloud oligarchy.
Yeah.
You have the three oligarchs, you know, you have, and then you have everybody else who kind of like tries to play around the space and can't quite, you know, ultimately compete at grander scale, but still manage to make a business of it.
Well, you know, and the interesting thing about Bezos himself right now, he's number three. He will be number one, I believe, because Amazon's going to continue to expand and, you know, continue to create new businesses. I don't think there's anybody that's going to come up to catch him, you know, not until whatever next big breakthrough comes through. And who knows what that will be or when it will be.
Yeah. It'll probably be the person who does like the real legit AI stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be one of those four, IoT, AI, VR, those three industries will probably unlock the key to the next mega billionaire. You know, whoever creates Skynet. Whoever creates Skynet will be the richest. Because he'll just unleash Skynet on everybody.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just finish off with one quick thing, Gabriel. This week it was announced that the Brave browser received like $4 million, $4.5 million in funding. And the Brave, the thing about the Brave browser is that it's got ad blocking built in, which a lot of people would like to have. You know, who wouldn't want to a browser? Who wouldn't want to have a browser that blocks ads? Well, it's Amazon, Facebook, Google. None of those companies want you to have a browser that blocks ads. Does this thing have a snowball's chance in hell?
Hell no. Because you know what those sites will do? They will just simply not allow that browser to integrate. It already happens now. You go to certain websites, it's like, we noticed you're using ad blocking. Watch this 15-minute video. Or you can just turn off your ad blocking and just use the site like normal. There's too much money at stake. And it's like, you know, people are going to adopt it, and then they're going to go to a bunch of sites, and they're simply just not going to work.
Yeah, that'll probably do it.
And that's perfectly up to those organizations to do it. It's like, you know what? There's plenty of browsers out there. We don't need to cater to all of them.
So is Brave going to have to come up with technology to spoof the kind of browser that they are? I mean, do they block at the client side, or do they, you know, how does that work? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head, but, you know, I just think it's an interesting concept. I mean, I run an ad blocker on my as a plugin extension. I notice some sites work better without it, and they tend to be heavy. You know, they tend to take up resources and things like that. And then, you know, and then there's sometimes it's like, you know, maybe it's something you can turn on or off easily, because sometimes you do want to reward, you know, a site or a consumer, or some place that you go to do business.
I want to reward Facebook in the worst way.
I just want to delete Facebook.
Are you a Facebook user? Do you use it?
I do, and it's for family stuff and then political ramblings and rants like everybody else. It's funny. I said, I'm not posting another damn thing until this election's over. And, of course, I went and posted a bunch of other stuff after that. Like, I just like it. All it is now is just like videos and crap and, you know, clickbait web pages and, you know, these celebrities, 15-minute celebrities that had, you know, brain tumors. And then you click through 45 pages of stuff to see the 15 people. It's the web has become a horrible place. It's just awful.
Damn. All right.
I just hate it.
And with that, let's end episode 97. We'll see if it gets any better by the time we record episode 98. Thanks, Gabriel. See you next week.
Hey, thanks, Mark. All right, take care.